Good morning and welcome to Jonesy, the show that brings you conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world of books, podcasts, radio, theater, music, and humor, guaranteed to entertain and enlighten. I'm the host of Jonesy, Ken Jones, no relation by the way. On today's episode, we welcome Susanna Millman, author of the photograph collection Alive with the Dead, or A Fly on the Wall with a Camera, from San Francisco's Last Gasp Press. The book includes over 500 of Susanna's photographs following the Grateful Dead and friends from the mid-1980s through Jerry Garcia's passing in 1995 and up to the current incarnation of the band, Dead & Company. Along the way, we get to know the band members, crew, staff, family, fellow musicians, and fans through the photos. Whether you're new to the band or a longtime Deadhead, Susanna captures the people, the time, and the place so vividly and intimately, you too will feel like a fly on the wall. Take it from those who were there and know the band well. David Gans, host of the Grateful Dead Hour, says, Alive with the Dead is a warm, intimate document of Susanna's membership in several overlapping tribes of smart, soulful, fun-loving people. And Deadhead-in-Chief Bill Walton calls the book a deluxe and celebratory package of joy, happiness, and the highs and lows of life with the Grateful Dead on and off the stage. Please join us for our conversation with Susanna Millman, which is already in progress. Susanna, it's a real joy talking with you today. As most Grateful Dead fans know, the latest incarnation of the band, which is Dead & Company, just wrapped up their final tour in San Francisco. They played 3 sold-out shows in Oracle Park, and that's where the Giants play, a baseball stadium, with about 40,000 people attending each show. And you were there with them on that last day?
I was there on the last day, yes. Yes, unfortunately, I had gone to see them also at Citi Field because I happened to be in New York.
You're a New Yorker.
But most unfortunately, as I walked through the sections, which this was before the show, dead sober, to leave my bag with my friends so I wasn't carrying it around all night, and just had my camera and other lens, there was most unfortunately, as you went into one of the rows, a little half step.
Uh-oh.
And I did a little Citi Field half step toodle ouch.
I heard you had a...
So I'm just, a broken leg.
Oh, a broken leg. No, I heard you also had a penchant for bad puns, but that's a good one.
That's right. Yeah.
In fact, your website is Mamarazzi, which is a pun on paparazzi,
right.
Of course.
Right.
So you recovered from the broken leg in time to see the show at Oracle Park, that last final show?
Well, no, I am very grateful to our dear friend Michael Bailey, who works for Live Nation. He manages the storied Fillmore Auditorium. And Michael invited us to the Live Nation luxury suite, which was dead center. Fabulous. Dead center, because that way I could photograph all the lights and stuff, and it was a great view for the drone show too, which just knocked me out. Did they do drones the other two nights, Ken?
No, they didn't. In fact, I was just at the first two nights. I wasn't at the last, but we did get back to the room. We were having dinner with my son there. We did get back to our room in time to see the Nugsnet live stream of the drones, and it was one of those technological miracles that you would never think you'd see in your day.
I know. It's amazing. I mean, there were, I don't know how many drones there were. I keep meaning to find this out.
Somewhere between 100 and 200 was what I was able to find.
Okay. And brilliant programming. I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know the outfit who does it. But, you know, I was hoping to get a parallel last shot, thinking that there would be fireworks. But that's so last century now.
Yes, these are a little bit more sophisticated.
Yeah. At $79.95, and even, you know, there were fireworks after the show, and that was another baddish pun, how they the Grateful Dead ended with a bang, not a whimper.
Right. In fact, in the book, you have this wonderful photo of Phil Lesh. It's a multiple exposure. So you have Phil Lesh playing on stage and then fireworks are coming out of his base and his head, his whole body.
Yes, that was totally random. Okay, that was before Photoshop. That was taken on July 13th, 1984. Okay, that was the show at which they played Dark Star again after such a long time. And it was quite magic. And at that July 4th, I had been up on my roof shooting the fireworks. And the fog came in. So I came down from the roof, took the roll of film out of my camera, put it in my camera bag, pop the roll of film back in, and it happened. And I mean, that was just a natural, that was just a happen in camera double exposure. I just couldn't believe my eyes.
You've experienced a few of those synchronous events through your life with the dead. I know you've mentioned that. It seems to something that happens around the Grateful Dead.
It happens. It does. It really does happen. I mean, just like I so deeply believe if you are meant to go to a show, you will get into the show one way or another.
That leads to my next question, kind of your impressions of Dead & Company and certainly that last concert. It seems that it's one of the best versions of the post-Jerry Dead. I think it's the best. And still bringing what you mentioned, the community, that sense of community, but also adventure and magic, something otherworldly, which is the Dead's legacy.
Yeah. No, it's definitely the whole community thing. I mean, it was really going to see them in December of 2015. It was like, oh my God, this is my scene. These are my peeps. This is my life, you know, because I hadn't seen some of the later further things in the early tens, family politics and whatnot, which are too tedious to go into.
And I won't ask.
But it just was wow. And so since then, I mean, I've seen either one or two shows every time they've played out here, but haven't gone on tour with them. I don't know if it's my favorite cover band, actually, but I do.
Can I ask who is maybe
Jay
filling
Red.
For?
J-Red.
Oh, okay. Yes. Joe Russo's Almost Dead. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Because they playing like in the late 60s when I was not on the bus yet. You know, so I really appreciate that. And Bobby is sometimes a little too slow. I mean,
I've heard that among deadheads. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I had never experienced it until the night after my accident. We streamed it, you know, on Nugs.net. And the trucking was so slow. I swear the truck could have gone across the country, you know. It was better. It was better as the encore. And so I didn't, the last night. I was very disappointed. There was no Stella Blue at all in the whole Oracle songs. That is my fave.
Or Ship of Fools, which is another ballad.
Or Ship of Fools, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting which of the Jerry tunes Bobby chose to do, like Days Between, which is so specific to Jerry and so about, a romantic thing in his life that Hunter wrote when he briefly went back together with a woman who he had been with when the three of them were kids in Palo Alto together. Yeah, so they did that, and they did Standing on the Moon, I think. The
first night, was a beautiful version of Standing on the Moon. Of course, with the mention of San Francisco, that got a big cheer from the crowd.
Yes. we like that. Although here on our back porch in July, I mean, it's really cold, okay? It is cold. It doesn't go over 63 degrees here in San Francisco.
They sold a lot of dead official merchandise sweatshirts at the two shows I was at. It was a fairly, well, it was a beautiful day, but it was in the high 70s, low 80s. And then at night, there's a wind coming in and it gets down to low 60s. Yeah, at the stadium. Now, I should mention that your husband is Dennis McNally, and he was publicist and official historian for the dead. He wrote what many consider the definitive biography of the band, A Long Strange Trip, The Inside History of the Grateful Dead, and edited another wonderful book, Jerry on Jerry, which collected previously unpublished interviews with Garcia, including a few of Dennis's own. And he contributed notes, Susanna, to your book. Are you and Dennis still in touch with the band members? Maybe Mickey, he wrote the foreword for the book.
Yeah, with Mickey and mostly. And that's really the only one, you know, still kind of up close and personal.
Now, from the Dead and Company shows last week in San Francisco, I'd like to go back to your early days, how you started in photography and met the band, which you write about in the book, in the section, how I came to be a fly on the wall. And I'm quoting, in 1970, I dropped out of a linear academic life in New York and went to South America to study shamanism, where I joined up with a group of hippies riding horseback across the Andes to the Amazon. Now, can you tell us about that great adventure and how it led somehow to your connection with the dead? Again, another synchronous event.
These people were ripping deadheads. And I also had, I think that they had tapes, actually. And I had Working Man's Dead, which was more accessible. So it was more of a breaking into something that was more, you know, songs. I got into loving the jams later on. So we listened to Grateful Dead tapes a lot, and people would also bring things down like New Riders tapes. And so when I came back to the Bay Area, I mean, it was all very synchronous, because one of my best friends from South America became really good friends with Nikki Scully in Egypt. And I had met Rock and Nikki independently going on a trip to Eugene for one of the, or I don't remember quite what year it was. Must have been 78, because it was before they went to Egypt.
Oh, Autzen Stadium?
Yeah, Autzen, right. Uh-huh. Right. And there was an extra, I got a phone call from Nikki that there was an extra seat on the plane. However, our with Dennis daughter was with her birth father in South America. And there were no cell phones. I mean, I had no idea where she was, and I just couldn't take off, because she could come home at any time. And, you know, I couldn't not be there. So I didn't go to Egypt, unfortunately. Speaking of horseback, I mean, those are wonderful, the pictures of the guys on horseback and the line. And after their Egypt trip, a wonderful example of Grateful Dead synchronicity happened at the 10/21/78 show, where Candace was doing a slideshow from Egypt.
And that's Candace Brightman, who is the lighting
Candace
director.
Candace Brightman, my hero, Candace Brightman. Absolutely, an absolute genius, wonderful woman. And at the same time, you know, they were playing, singing Eyes of, Sometimes We Ride on Our Horses. That's what.
That's amazing.
It was
yes,
just
that's right.
Amazing. And I think asked Dennis, well, you know, maybe Dennis asked her, oh, that was really synced well or something. And she said, oh, no, that just is what it was. You know, isn't that amazing?
Part of the Grateful Dead magic. Yeah.
It is part of the Grateful Dead magic. I mean, we don't know how to describe, or because we like to quantify everything. And so there's no way to quantify the Grateful Dead magic. But boy, it's out there. It's real.
I actually, even as a fan, as a deadhead, I think we've all experienced it. So it's not a strange phenomenon unique to you or just people directly close to the band. Now, I know you talked about in the book, Susanna, you went to a Winterland show, and that was December 29th, 1979. So their New Year's Eve run there.
Yeah, and... no, it was 77. It was the one in Oakland. You're absolutely correct about where it was.
Okay. Well, I was going to mention that the show where you were introduced to Dick and Carol Latvala.
Yes.
That was it. Okay.
And yeah, that was it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And Dick, of course, was the Dead's archivist, known for the Dick's Pick series of recordings. And you became friends also with Rock and Nikki Scully. You mentioned Nikki.
Right.
Rock was the band's publicist, and that was your husband Dennis's predecessor in the role.
Yes.
How did that lead to meeting Dennis and eventually meeting Jerry Garcia himself?
Well, okay. In the early 80s, Zuni and Nikki were already good friends, and they had started an import business from Egypt after the trip with the Dead to Egypt. And then Zuni, Nikki, and another friend and I went with our children to Egypt the following year. But, you know, there was no Grateful Dead music. We just tripped around with some of the people that they met and rode on the horses. But I was importing things. I had an import-export business from Bali and later India in the early 80s. So we shared an office at 55 Hepburn Street in San Rafael. And we had the upstairs of that building, and downstairs was Linda and John Kahn. So I got to be friends with them. And, you know, and Nikki would be working there. And so she'd go home and make dinner. And Jerry lived in the flat downstairs from where Rock and Nikki lived. So I would go up there for dinner. And that was how I met him, you know. And he was just this really fascinating, really interesting man, as long as you didn't treat him like Jerry Garcia, you know. He just wanted to be just, you know, another cool guy, you know. And
I like what you said in one interview where you're talking about the story. You mentioned Jerry would come up for dinner because, as most people would suspect, he wasn't a cook.
He was not a cook. No, he cooked with his strings, you know.
Right, a musician, right, that's right. True. Now, you write in the book that this period when you were hanging out with Rock and Nikki Scully and Jerry in 1985 and onward was the beginning of your life as a professional photographer.
Yeah, it was the early 80s. It was the early 80s, actually, from traveling.
Ah.
That's why, you know, I was seeing amazing things in Bali and Nepal, and I just, you know, had to share them with people. And I'm not so I just thought the best way to do that would be by taking pictures, and I started getting into photography.
So that's what attracted you to the art form, and it is an art form, initially was just to kind of capture those moments that you were experiencing so you could share them with other people.
That's right. That's right. And then I thought, well, why not the Grateful Dead, too? You know, I discovered then how tricky concert photography is, you know, with the lighting and gets a small spot of lit and the dark in the background and how that throws metering off and learning what the correct settings were. And, you know, it was definitely a learning curve. It was also a learning curve for me not to think about wearing cute heels to the show, you know.
It wasn't very practical, huh?
No wobbling around. So eventually I got it together and the pictures came out better and better. So how I met Dennis, okay. So my initial meeting of Dennis was through Dick. Dennis and I lived like 5 blocks away from each other in San Francisco. And so Dick came over and brought Dennis over. And I had read Desolate Angel, his Kerouac book.
Yes.
So I was really dying to meet this guy because I thought it was such a great book. I mean, he is such a good writer. He packed so much into beautifully written short spaces. And so that was how I met him. At that point in my life, let's see, our daughter was 12, and I was determined to not have any more bad relationships with men. So I was determined to keep Dennis as a friend. And then one day, Jerry said to me, "Hey, man, you and McNally ought to get together." You know, I mean, just out of the blue. And he said something very similar to Dennis. And I thought, well, okay, I will. You know, Jerry said this, gosh. We'll see how it goes. And maybe. And,
Jerry Garcia, the matchmaker.
The matchmaker.
In Yiddish, right. They call that the Yentl.
Yeah, right. 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 And so, you know, I put Dennis through the little test of, was he really going to put my name on the list? Because Rock, bless his heart, I love Rock. But he wasn't the most reliable. The things that he said he might do, you know, he would. Anyway, but Dennis did that, and I thought, okay, let's give this a shot. And that is kind of why I asked Jerry to walk me down the aisle. I mean, it wasn't a random groupie thing, you know. I mean, he had a direct part in this.
Oh, yeah. I was actually going to ask you that a little later, but did you want to talk about the wedding, how you actually asked Jerry to, well, not officiate, but since your birth father had passed away, your surrogate father was out of the country, you wrote a nice letter to Jerry.
That's right. I wrote a nice letter to Jerry in which I told him he could walk on water, because where we were getting married was a club in San Francisco called the Oasis. And it had, I don't know if it still has, it's still open, but it has a covered swimming pool.
who could turn down that offer, right, to walk on water?
Yeah, he said, oh, that's weird enough, man, you know. And he told Dennis that, you know, he was very happy to do it, but marriages that he participated in have worked out very badly, and that was his caveat. And I know of one where that unfortunately is the case. We, however, almost 38 years later, I think, yeah, 85, 2023, yeah.
Jerry did good.
Jerry did good, yeah.
I wanted to get to a few of your mentors. You mentioned in the book that you were inspired in the early days, at least, by Geraldine Brandelius, who published the Grateful Dead Family album in 1988. Right. How did Geraldine and her book influence your work and lead eventually to Alive with the Dead?
Well, I realized maybe specifically at the BAMMIES in 1988, the year where the Touch of Grey album came out. Was that In the Dark?
Oh, In the Dark. Yeah, that was their last studio release. And that was a big hit, Touch of Grey. Yeah. I think it reached number one, the only Dead song to ever reach that plateau.
Yeah. Somebody told Jerry that, and he said, "I'm appalled."
That sounds like it was something he would say.
Yeah. No, he was not into competitions at all.
And he didn't show up to the BAMMIES that year, did he?
He was at the BAMMIES.
Oh, okay, but not at
the... Oh, yeah, he was definitely at the BAMMIES.
Not at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That he felt was really, you know, a competition thing. And with the BAMMIES, I mean, he would, you know, he was from San Francisco. And he was a San Franciscan. And they also were going to win it. You know, they also were going to win everything. And he grudgingly agreed to do it.
I should also mention, Susanna, for those who don't know, the BAMMIES are the Bay Area Music Awards. So the BAMMIES is kind of like calling, the Academy Awards the Oscars.
Bay Area Music is BAMMIES.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dennis was, you know, worried till the moment he stepped out of the limo that he wasn't going to show up. But he did. And Jerry, once he would get somewhere, no matter how he grumbled about it before, he was right into it. You know, he would love it. He loved the music. I mean, it was great. Merle played with them. John Fogerty played with them. And I have a lot of pictures of that in my book. But I'm mentioning this because there were so many, like Cassidy and Eileen Law, for instance, and Basha Razine and her daughter, Melissa. So it was multi-generational. And it was just such family. And that was when I realized that the family and what was going on off stage was, you know, kind of just as or equal, more, whatever, interesting than what was going on stage. So I determined to, you know, win people's trust and be a fly on the wall. And, you know, they were more used to seeing me with a camera than without. You know? And I am not really a mamarazzi in the sense that, you know, I would think of publishing a scandalous picture of people who I loved if I had the opportunity to do that. I mean, I just wouldn't do that because there's really no point. I'm much more a fly on the wall than mamarazzi.
Now, Mickey Hart, when you talk about that, of course, Mickey, we know is one of the drummers in The Dead and more recently Dead and Company. He wrote the foreword to Alive with the Dead. He makes an interesting analogy between photography, in this case, your work, and The Dead's music. He writes, and I'm quoting, "In a real sense, Susanna fully became a photographer shooting The Grateful Dead. In talking about this recently, she told me, quoting you, as I became more attuned to living in the moment, photography became my vehicle for focusing on the moment." Back to Mickey, which again makes total sense. After all, as an improvisational band, we had to play in the now, and that's what a great shot captures. We used our instruments to be in the moment. She used her cameras. Did you feel that connection too between what you were doing with photography, what the Dead were doing with music?
Oh, yes, especially when I got a good shot of them, you know, a good exchange, looking at each other.
Oh, you even have what you called Jerry giving Bob Weir, Bobby Weir, the look. And then kind of have some explanation where there were some times when Jerry said Bob Weir and also Phil Lesh on bass would just totally surprise him with what they came up with.
Right.
In a nice way, in a delightful way, because right. I guess Jerry Garcia lived for those moments.
Yeah. No, he did. I mean, you know, he was perplexed, amused, delighted, you know, particularly by Bobby, you know, and so, and since they were next to each other, it was kind of easier to get those looks than Jerry and Phil, who would be, you know, Bobby would be in between them and it wouldn't be quite registered quite as well visually.
No, you have an absolutely wonderful picture in there of that look. Yeah, it expresses all that surprise, that delight, that joy, that kind of perplexity.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
What's going on? But I think I'll go with it, which I think says a lot about how the Dead played.
Yeah.
Something would happen and they would just kind of take off
and
on that.
They would go with it, yeah.
Yeah, like jazz.
Yeah.
Now, I read, Susanna, that you're a student of Buddhism, and I think you have been for some time. And Buddhism emphasizes through study and practice the art of being in the present moment, the be here now, as Ram Dass said. And you're becoming more attuned to living in the moment, which Mickey said seems a bridge between your spiritual side and your photography.
Yeah. That is true. You know, like Wavy would say, how can I be the best wavy gravy I can be? And so I would say, how can I be the best Susanna picture, you know, photographically as I can be by immersing myself in this moment, you know, and in the music and just shutting everything else out.
Did you find your Buddhist practice helped with the photography and maybe vice versa?
Maybe.
In that respect, shutting things out and being in the present.
Well, I think it's improved my concentration more. Yeah. I mean, it helps. It certainly helps with photo editing also, you know, and where I see photographs that have captured a moment, whereas, yeah, that's an ordinary one. There's nothing wrong with it. It's exposed properly, you know, but, you know, it's nothing special.
Now, I want to talk about, we talked about the synchronous events. There was one that happened to me, actually, when my wife and I were in San Francisco to see those final Dead and Company shows.
Uh-huh.
There was an Ansel Adams exhibit at the
DeYoung
Museum in Golden Gate Park. We went, which is amazing. I think there were over 400 photographs, not all by Ansel Adams, but also related photographers. And right after that, I read one of your previous interviews, and you actually mentioned Adams. You said
Ansel Adams, yeah.
Yeah, you said, quote, Ansel Adams was asked why he left his negatives wherever he shot. And he said something to the effect of, this is a basis. I printed them one way, and right. other people are going to print them another way. And then you made the analogy, it's all art and creativity that we want to share with the future. And it's the same with the Dead's music. Again, another connection between your work and what the Dead were doing on stage.
It's what they were doing. And are you familiar with Skull and Roses, Ventura? The Skull and Roses Festival?
Oh, is that something that's going on now, currently?
No. There have been five of them in April. Uh-huh. And they are Grateful Dead cover bands of every stripe.
Oh, I've probably heard of a lot of the bands, like Dark Star Orchestra.
Yeah, so there's Dark Star Orchestra. They even had the real deal with Phil and Friends this past year. And I love Phil and his son playing together. That is just so cool, Phil and Graham. And also they added Dwayne Betts on guitar.
Oh yes.
So that kind of got Allmany in addition to
Dickie Betts' son from the Allman Brothers.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. So J-Rat has never been there, but Stu Allen. I mean, just a wonderful band called Brown Eyed Women, who are all women from the East Coast who are wonderful musicians, and. Well, it's like me being, and Rosie being, women photographers, you know, people, but we're photographers who happen to be women. And this is a Grateful Dead band of very talented musicians who happen to be women, you know, and, but they are a really, really good band. I mean, there's Jerry cover bands, there's Bobby cover bands. There's even a Pigpen cover band called the Alligators, which is pure theater. I mean, they're great guys, the Alligators, and they jam other Dead tunes, but all the vocals are just Pigpen songs.
So these are all contemporary artists who are just taking these songs that some of them were written 55 years ago.
That's right.
And interpreting them, kind of like what you were getting to with Ansel Adams and his negatives.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's really analogous. And the music, the Grateful Dead musical library is analogous to the Ansel Adams negatives at the University of Arizona, which I believe is where they are, but they're somewhere in Arizona anyway. Yeah, there was a band there called Latin Dead, which combines salsa and dead. And their lead guitarist is John Kadlicek.
Oh, John Kay, yeah, from Dark Star Orchestra and Further.
Uh-huh. Yeah, John Kay with a bunch of horns. Look them up. They're really interesting. And I think that they're doing a West Coast tour in autumn. I don't know if they're coming up to Oregon or not, but I know that.
Oh, look. I like to catch almost every Dead cover band that comes up. Cover band might not always be the best. It seems kind of like they're just copying what the Dead did.
Right.
But they're reinterpreting it. Even Dark Star Orchestra, which will play an entire set list from a concert. They interpret it a different way. It's not played note for note like the Dead played it.
Right.
I don't even know if that's possible.
It's probably not.
Now, we talked about you getting kind of attuned to what the band was doing and getting accepted so you could take pictures without people saying, you know, what are you doing here? But the band members, especially the crew, I think from what I've heard, were not always the easiest folks to get along with. some you instantly bonded with, like Dick Latvala, Rock Scully, Jerry, of course, Mickey Hart. And you mentioned a close friendship with Candace Brightman, the band's lighting director. Could you talk about some of those early days with the band when the reception maybe was not always warm and welcoming?
Well, a crew member, let's see, I shot the So Far video at the Marin Civic Center. I shot with, you know, when they did their live recording for Len Talamico's video. And one of my cameras disappeared, you know, and I had no idea where it was. And I really thought I was crazy. And then, of course, it turned out to be in the, you know, one of the crew was playing a little prank on me.
You were getting initiated, do you think, into the family?
Yeah. Yeah, I was getting initiated. And then there is a story I tell in the book where I was shooting on stage and Billy Grillo, who was the drum roadie, starts beckoning to me, you know, and I thought that I had done something, you know, off limits. And, you know, so a million things go through my mind. Oh, my God, I'm going to be in trouble. And my trouble extends to at home because I'm married to Dennis. And so in a way, I could get away with a lot more and a lot less than other photographers in that unusual situation. Anyway, what Billy wanted was he had a Rottweiler, Caesar, and he had got the dog, the headphones that matched his headphones. And he wanted a picture of the two of them with their headphones on. Oh, sure, I can do that. I can do that. So that picture is in the book.
So yeah. I think you were accepted at that point. But you have a quote in the book. You called the dead and friends a unique and remarkable extended family that put the fun
in dysfunction.
Now, over time, obviously, you gained the trust of the band and the crew and became the fly on the wall in the subtitle of the book. Mickey Hart in the foreword has an interesting explanation, and I'm quoting him, "Susanna is petite in stature. She's very non-threatening, takes little space and carries a smile with her camera. Besides being one of us, she's invisible in her work. These are the qualities that allow access to all areas." So that seems like the ultimate acceptance to get Mickey's kind of badge of honor there. She's one of us.
That really made me happy.
Helped with the photographs because you enjoyed the more candid pics where you said you weren't asking people to pose. You were just taking these moments that happen and trying to be as out of the way as possible, not noticing.
You know, and always like paying attention. Like in Paris in 1990, when we were on the bus going to the airport, Jerry is sitting outside smoking a cigarette with his baby daughter, Keelan, the youngest of the four daughters, you know, and so I shot that through the window and it came out okay, you know, but that was, wow, look at that.
Now, you were with the Dead, from 1985, there were some major changes, probably starting with In the Dark, because it became a hit, unlikely as it is, especially Touch of Grey. So from about 1985, the early 80s, to Jerry's passing in 1995, you mentioned in the book how the venues changed with the bands playing bigger arenas, how the sound and lighting crew had to adjust to what must have been some pretty challenging conditions, especially after all that success and more people coming to the shows. Were those conditions also more challenging for you as a photographer?
Well, it kind of depended on how high the stage was. You know, with big stages, it became more interesting to take overall pictures also, you know, and with all the crowd and stuff and the band. It became somewhat of a tenser environment, you know, not as relaxed as in the 80s. But there were one of the very fun things was that Candace had to change her lighting. So she rented six mannequins, set them up on stage at the Oakland Coliseum Arena.
Just as stand-ins for the band members to get the lighting right.
Yeah, and then, you know, ran all sorts of lighting stuff. And so I shot that. And in the book, there's a picture of a shot with the mannequin on the opposite page. There's a shot with very similar lighting for the real deal in Oakland. And as for the sound, I mean, I know nothing about the sound, but I really love those guys. I was very tight with Healy and the ultrasound guys, and could always be at the soundboard, which was, you know, a good place to get certain type of pictures and also to rest my feet.
And the sound has always been pristine. I even felt that in Oracle Park, this huge uh-huh. baseball stadium in a San Francisco night. And we were probably up above you. We were in the third level along the third baseline because we were looking at the stage. And the sound was just amazing. We heard the separation of instruments and how they all melded together.
That's just
incredible. Now, in terms of actual changes in the band with all that success and the bigger venues and maybe some more security problems because of a larger crowd coming and a newer crowd, a younger crowd, there must have been some changes in the band. I think you said the one that you noticed the most was Brent Midland's passing and how that made Jerry feel. And I think you said you don't think he ever really recovered from that.
Yeah, I don't. Just that's just my opinion. I mean, other people think that too, but I think that, yeah.
So they must have been close, and I don't think Jerry blamed himself because there's no reason to, but I guess it was just a traumatic event.
It was a very, very traumatic event. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, he loved playing with Brent. You know, I mean, Jerry had a very bluesy streak, and Brent was bluesy sound, and you know, yeah. The last night at Oracle, I really liked that Dead and Company did "Dear Mr. Fantasy."
Oh, and "Hey Jude."
Hey Jude. Yeah. I mean, that was like, oh, okay, this is a tribute to Brent. I love this, you know.
And he was also, I think it was the first night they had kind of memorial on the big screen with all the members of the Dead and family that we lost, including Brent and Jerry, yeah. Of course, was the last shot there, the last photo on the screen. Now, I should mention that the photos in the book are not only of the Dead, the crew and the family, but a number of musicians who sat in with the Dead and an amazing assortment of celebrities who met the band. I'm just going to give a list here. Clarence Clemons, Jimmy Cliff, Carlos Santana, Ornette Coleman, Branford Marsalis from the jazz world, Chuck Berry, Tom Waits, Ricky Lee Jones, Bill and Hillary Clinton, Jerry Brown, who was governor of California at the time, Ken Kesey, of course, Wavy Gravy, even Bob Dylan. I wonder, Susanna, do you have any favorites from the list? Maybe people you met and got to know a little or got a chance to talk to?
I got to talk to Tom Waits a little bit. I've talked, you know, with Kesey. I mean, I was pretty tight with Wavy. Our daughter was Camp Winter Rainbow.
And he officiated, right, at your wedding with
he
Dennis?
Officiated, yeah. And Billy was the best man.
That's great. Yeah. And of course, Jerry walked you down the aisle, which we mentioned.
Jerry walked me down the aisle. Yeah. And he said, my friends tell me, because I you know, wasn't there, but in the green room beforehand, he said, I'm really nervous, man. And then so my friend Zuni said to him, Jerry, you play in front of thousands of people all the time. What can you be nervous about? I don't have my axe, man.
Yeah, and that reminds me of another story in the book. I think it was in one of Dennis's notes, which you call Scribb's notes.
Yeah.
He mentioned that at a certain time, maybe it was in the 80s, you know, all the singer-songwriters were doing solo shows, and they eventually persuaded Jerry to give it a try. He went through the first set, I think, just him and a guitar, and he said, no more. And he wanted to walk off stage. I think he wanted them to get, was it John?
He said, get me Con. I'm not doing this anymore.
Right. He wanted a bass player to be there with him so he's not alone on stage. So
yeah,
that's funny. But with other musicians and with his guitar, he just felt like.
Oh, yeah. And he felt very different with an electric than acoustic guitar. Okay. He was okay with acoustic with Grisman, you know, and that was lovely. I really enjoyed shooting them for the Not For Kids Only album. And I mean, it was very, very wholesome. They were stoned on very good weed and they just were playing music and having such a good time. And it was just lovely being on David's porch and back porch in Mill Valley in September, I think. But
Oh, not in July.
Not in July. But after, I was at Lincoln Center because I grew up in New York. I was into classical music growing up. I saw all sorts of classical concerts at Avery Fisher Hall at Lincoln Center. So my new love, Jerry Garcia, is playing there. Oh my God, I got to go to New York, So I went to New York and with Linda Kahn and John's wife, and after Jerry walks into the hotel room saying, "Well, at least I can busk on. I know I can busk on the subway."
he'd never starve.
He'd never starve. Right. And I didn't know at that time how strict concert halls were about photo passes, because at that point at the decade, anybody could get into just about any concert except Dylan, who you could not photograph. except when he opened for the Dead, then I.
Oh, yeah. You have some photos of Bob Dylan in the book. Yeah.
So Linda called Dennis, who I didn't know at the time and didn't know me at the time. And he had just got the job as the publicist like a week before or something. And, he had no idea who this Susanna Milne person was. And so there were no texts, no cell phones at that time. So, he really couldn't do anything. So eventually she persuaded Steve.
Oh, Steve Parrish?
Parrish. And I got my photo pass, so I was able to take pictures, of them.
Now, he's still around, Steve Parrish.
Oh, Steve is still around, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. I think he was a roadie for Moon Alice.
He was roadie and somewhat of a front man, for Moon Alice. And
yeah, not a Dead cover band, but one highly influenced by the Dead, of course.
Yeah, a jam band. Like
right. Yeah, well, the Dead started. They started that whole scene.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned in Alive with the Dead that you might do another book, but it wouldn't be Grateful Dead photos. You have some concert photos, but you think those are kind of overdone by now. Can you talk about some of the other photos you've taken of your travels worldwide and other musicians? Just a short list, Billy Strings, Bonnie Raitt, Santana.
Yeah, Billy Strings, Bonnie Raitt, some Santana.
Joni Mitchell.
Tom Petty. I have.
You had one of Miles Davis, which I loved.
And one of Miles Davis and one of his very last shows in 1991 at the Mountain Winery. Yorma, Tuna, Feet.
We should mention Dennis is publicist for Little Feet, isn't he? So
yes, he is.
You've got some all access there.
Yeah. And they're very nice guys. I really like them too. We were in Jamaica with them, maybe 2009, which was really fun. It was Tuna and Feet. So that was really fun.
Well, that would make a pretty good book. do you have plans? And then the travel photos, again, you mentioned some of the places you were at.
Asia, South Asia. I also have photographed Zakir Hussein a great deal. And we followed, Dennis and I followed him around in India. We were Zakir groupies. And he's kind of a niche, it's kind of a niche market with world music here. But I mean, he is God in India. When you get off the airplane in Mumbai, there is a wall that's covered with paintings of musicians, and he is half of that wall.
Ah.
Yeah. And I mean, we were in a car behind him. The driver had a police let us go, go through when the driver said that's Zakir Hussein in the car.
Wow. The biggest celebrity in India.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me a little of my wife and I were in Montreal a few years ago, and they have this mural. It must be at 10 to 12 stories high of Leonard Cohen, who I think he must be the Zakir Hussein of Montreal.
Absolutely. That's somebody I wish I had photographed.
Did you ever see a Leonard Cohen concert, but you didn't have your camera with you? Or?
Well, yeah. I saw him in one of the last tours that he did after his manager ripped him off and he went on tour again. And, you know, the tour that was Leonard Cohen Live in London.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. It was part of that tour. I just really, you know, I mean, I just wanted to see Leonard Cohen. I went and listened to the concert. You know?
Another person whose art is very much influenced by his spiritual side.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Well, Suzanne, I just want to close with a note from Jerry that he sent you guys on your wedding day. And I love the note. It's a beautiful note. He wrote, "If we make it through this, we'll make it through everything."
Yeah, right.
Good times and luck and love. And I just want to thank you for talking with me today and wishing you and Dennis good times.
It was great talking with you, Ken. I mean, I love sharing this stuff and meeting more people in our community. And
it is a community. I've never met anybody in the dead. I took my son, my oldest son, and this was when I think they were called the Other Ones at that time. They were playing Columbia Meadows, late 90s, early 2000. Uh-huh. And Bobby was in the group, and I don't know who else, maybe Mickey, maybe Billy, Phil probably. And we were sitting a little in front of, fortunately, Bill Walton and and his good friend from the Blazers, also Maurice Lucas, who's 6'8", 6'9" himself. So it just felt, you know, this kind of this was deadheads for us. And Alex, my son, enjoyed the concert, though he keeps joking, you know, the Dead have two or three songs and they just play them for, you know, an hour each. So I don't know how valid a criticism that is, but I've heard that from other people too. But it was just a great show. And you felt part of that family with Bill Walton there. He's taking his friend Maurice Lucas. And every Dead show I've ever been to has been like that. I mean, you read about all these security problems. And I know they have some drug overdoses, some drunks, some injuries, like you breaking your leg in Citi Field. But usually it's a very good-natured crowd.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They watch out for each other. And I felt that in San Francisco, too, just a week ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. I totally agree, Ken. There was a young woman security at the Skull and Roses by the backstage entrance, and it was her first gig. And I overheard her saying to her associate, "God, this is my first time. I was so worried, and I'm so lucky that these people, they're so nice and easy and, you know, nonviolent and threatening."
Yeah, and you don't hear that often about other concerts, which sometimes can have some pretty devastating incidents.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Suzanne, again, thank you and wishing you good times and luck and love.
Okay, thank you. Back at you.
Thank you. Well, that's all for this episode of Jonesy here on KBOO Community Radio. If you missed any part of the show, would like to hear the longer, unexpurgated version, the director's cut, you might call it if we had one, you can listen anytime on demand at kboo.fm/program/Jonesy, Jonesy, or just search for it on the KBOO website. Before we head out the door, a big thank you to our guest today, Susanna Millman, author of the photograph collection Alive with the Dead or A Fly on the Wall with a Camera from San Francisco's Last Gasp Press. You can learn more about Susanna, the book, and all her work on her website, mamarazzi.com. That's mamarazzi, mamarazzi.com. Jonesy, by the way, comes to you every other week on the second and fourth Thursdays of the month from 11 to 11:30 a.m. Tune in for our next show on Thursday, August 10th at 11 a.m. I'm your host, Ken Jones, no relation, saying,
"Let there be songs to fill the air."